This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salam ala ashrafil anbiya'i wal mursaleen, nabiyyina wa qudwatina Muhammad alayhi afdal as-salawa wa azka taslim. Allahumma alimna bima yanfa'una wa anfa'na bima 'allamtana wa zidna 'ilman ya Rabbil Alameen. Today is the first class of classical Arabic, beginning classical Arabic. Arabic is one of the most important things that we can learn if we want to develop our relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That is because classical Arabic is the vessel that Allah chose to contain or communicate the revelation. Just the fact alone that Allah chose to speak with sound and letters in the Arabic language, the Quran, gives honor and blessing to the Arabic language. So our goal in studying the Arabic language is simply to draw closer to the words of Allah. There's no comparison between a person who stands in salah, listening to the imam recite, and even though that person hasn't memorized that particular surah or those particular ayat, they can understand what Allah spoke to them because of their knowledge of the Arabic language. Umar radiallahu anhu used to say that whoever wants to develop or build their intellect, then they should study the Arabic language. So we all know there's many, we could talk all night about the reasons for studying Arabic language. This, inshallah, is a humble attempt to begin that journey. And it is, in fact, a journey, right? This is not something that's going to be an overnight dramatic change. It's something that we want to slowly, step by step, build over time. What are our goals in studying classical Arabic? What is this course going to teach you? It is not going to teach you how to speak. It's not going to teach you how to, listen to a lesson or a soap opera or anything else like that in Arabic. It is primarily geared towards understanding the Quran and the Hadith of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. When it comes to conversation, when it comes to colloquial Arabic, those are all things that build off of a knowledge of classical Arabic. But they are not our principal main goal. Our main goal is to understand the Quran, even if we can't speak it, even if we can't sit in a lesson in the Prophet's Masjid or Masjid al-Haram in Mecca and understand what the Shaykh is saying. We want to be able to pick up the Quran and read it or listen to it and understand at least the majority of what is being said to us. So without further ado, we're going to get going into the text. What is the text that we're using? We are using the same curriculum that they use in the Islamic University of Medina, where I studied. I finished this curriculum twice, once on my own with some videos, much in the same way that you're doing. And then when I went to Medina to study, I did it a second time. So you'll notice if you're familiar with other Arabic curriculums, such as Arabiya Baini Yadayk or some of the other ones that are out there, you'll notice that there is not a lot of things here that is going to develop your conversational ability. It's not going to give you common everyday terms. We sometimes as students in Medina were even teased by the locals for the things that we didn't know, because I could talk all day about legal theory and, you know, hadith theory or the compilation of hadith and all of this, but many people, they weren't able to even name all of the fruits at the fruit stand or the vegetables in the grocery store. And even though somebody who is serious about Arabic, it's upon them and it's a good thing for them to try to push themselves to learn all of that. That's not our main goal. Our main goal is to understand and prioritize that which is in the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So we're starting today. If you're in this course, you should be able to read the letters with tashkil. What do I mean is tashkil? Tashkil is fatha, dhamma, kasra, sukun, right? These sort of what they call diacritical markings that help a non-native Arabic speaker to read. Eventually, if you persist in your studies, you will not need these diacritical markings any longer. That is a function of the amount of vocabulary you know and the rules of grammar that you know. But we're not there yet. So we need to be able to understand the tashkil, the fatha, the dhamma, the kasra, the sukun, and everything else. Don't be surprised, and I'll say this before we actually start in earnest the text. One of the things that is the most challenging aspect of learning Arabic is that for many people, it's the first language that they are learning as an adult. Okay? You have to realize that if you're growing up and you're speaking even multiple languages, just from what's going on around you, your family, your country, that is different than learning a language as an adult. As most people who are native English speakers can affirm, if you ask them the rules of their language, they don't know. They never had to learn the rules of their native language because they just spoke it automatically. So a lot of people get discouraged when they start learning Arabic, not necessarily just because it's Arabic, but because it's the first language they're learning as an adult. You teach language differently to an adult than you do to a child. With a child, you can just put them in, immerse them, and they will pick it up intuitively. However, when it comes to an adult, if they want a strong grasp of the language, they need to understand grammar. And if you have not studied grammar before, then guess what? You're really learning two languages. You're learning the target language and you're learning grammar. Okay, so for those of you who never studied grammar before in English or your native language, this course was going to teach you ideas about grammar in addition to what they are in Arabic. That being said, that's a perfect segue to our first lesson. So there are two broad categories of languages. The first category of language is called an analytic language. The second type of language is called a synthetic language. There's a really important difference between these two types of languages, and understanding these, what they mean, is going to help prepare you to understand Arabic. When I was teaching the young folks in the Sunday school this, I gave an example. And it really helped clarify the idea to them. So let's imagine that I say in English, we've got a couple brothers that are here in personal attendance. So sometimes I'm going to be using them for examples and exercises. So if I say, Tom hit the ball. Okay, that's our sample sentence. Tom hit the ball. Who is doing the hitting? Yes. I, Tom, am doing the hitting. That's obvious. Good. Who is or what is getting hit?
The ball.
Okay, that's easy. Now the question to Sheikh Ahmed. How do we know that Tom is the one that's hitting and that the ball is the one that's getting hit? He's looking at me like I'm insane. Anybody who's watching or joining in the Zoom, how do we know in the English language, what about that sentence tells us? I mean, حيث الدلالة, right? What tells us that Tom is the one that's doing the action hitting and that the ball is the one that's getting hit? These guys don't know. Placement in the sentence is what the Sheikh family says, which is exactly it. Sequence. Sequence. The order of the words in the sentence, better known as syntax, right? Like formally, syntax is the order that words appear in the sentence. Okay? Excellent. So, in English, if you change the order of those words, you change the meaning entirely. If I try to flip around the order of the words, it means the opposite of what I just said. If I said, the ball hits Tom, that means the exact opposite of what I initially said because I changed the order. Okay. Everybody's with me with that point. That is the definition of an analytic language, a language where meaning is communicated due to the order of the words in a sentence. All right? Now, let's get into our other type of language, our synthetic language. Before we pin down a definition of that, I'll give you, let's make up a language, okay? Let's make up a language. It's going to be called Engelbic, okay? Now, this language, this made-believe language that we have, we're not going to communicate who's doing the action, who's getting the action, just by the order in the sentence. We're actually going to put something onto the word itself to show whether it's doing the action or whether it's receiving the action. So in our language, Engelbic, we're going to add an oo sound to the end of any word that is doing an action. And we're going to add an a sound to any word that is receiving or getting an action. So, Sheikh Ahmed, if we have in English, Tom hit the ball, in our new language, Engelbic, what is that sentence? Tomu, yes. Hit the balla, right? Hit the balla. Exactly. Tomu, hit the balla. If this is how our new language, Engelbic, works, does it matter what order I put the words in the sentence? What if I said, the balla, Tomu, hit? Do you still understand the meaning? Yeah. You still understand the meaning. That's the definition of a synthetic language. A synthetic language is a language in which the meaning of the words or the meaning of the sentence is being communicated by things on the word, not by the order of the words in the sentence. And if everybody understands that concept, Arabic is going to be a whole lot easier because Arabic is a synthetic language, not an analytic language like English. You can flip things around. You can dice up sentences. You can mix them in a blender and put them back out in almost whatever order you want. How you determine what's doing what in the sentence is in the word itself. It's actually part of the word. So, with that said, does anybody have any questions up until this point? You can hit it, so we have analytic and synthetic. Okay, so let's go to the text. Lesson 1. Ad-darsu al-awwalu. The first word we have here is hadha. Hadha. Hadha in English means this. This. It is a type of word that we call a demonstrative pronoun. Oh my Lord, what is that? A demonstrative pronoun is something that takes the place of a noun. right? When you are indicating how close or far away it is, right? And the thing is known. So if I have my cup of tea here, or my mug of tea, instead of saying, my mug of tea is hot, my mug of tea is blue, my mug of tea has honey in it, eventually, if I keep making sentences like that, you're going to think that I'm not right in the head. I will start saying either it, which is a pronoun, or this cup of tea, which is indicating something that is known, something that is close, and something that stands in as a substitute for a noun. So here we have examples of sentences that start with this demonstrative pronoun. Okay, 1, 2, 3. Before we read those examples, I'm going to tell you something that is absolutely essential to understand in Arabic. Okay, and that is that there are two primary types of sentences in the Arabic language. There are two. Okay, I'm going to show off my terrible whiteboard writing here. Bismillah. Share screen. Okay, so the first type of sentence is one that begins with a noun. I'm going to write it in English over here, and I'll write it in Arabic later. Okay. Wow, that's really sloppy. And the second type of sentence is a type of sentence that begins with a verb. If you can keep this in your mind, Arabic will be a lot easier for you. Each of these two types of sentences has different rules entirely. They have different parts that make it up. So it's almost like if Arabic is a house, these are two separate rooms of the house. Before you get into anything, meaning what am I going to put on the word to communicate what I mean, I need to know what room I'm in. How do we call a noun in Arabic? A noun in Arabic is known as an ism. And for the grammatical terms, I am going to use Arabic because some things translate, especially in the beginning. But once we get further on, some things do not translate. So we have ism. And we have fi'l. Fa, ayn, lam. Ism and fi'l. I have to write out here. We have jumla. Jumla means sentence. Jumla, ismiya, and jumla fi'liya. There are sentences that begin with nouns and sentences that begin with verbs. Okay? Jumla ismiya, jumla means sentence. Jumla ismiya, and jumla fi'liya. It is ism. That is a very good question. There are rules. If anybody's memorized Ibn al-Jazari's poem in Tajweed, there's rules for how to pronounce the Hamzatul Wasl. We'll go into them at a later class. Right now, just take my word for it that it is ism. So we have two types of sentences, Jumlatul Fi'liya and Jumlatul Ismiya. All we're going to talk about now in this class and for the first several classes is type number one, jumlatu ismiya. Forget about sentences that begin with verbs for the time being. Just remember that they exist out there somewhere in an unknown land that we will come back to one day, inshallah. So back to our text. Why do I bring that up? Because this lesson deals with jumla ismiya. It deals with sentences that begin with nouns. Who would like to read our first sentence here? We have a volunteer in person. Our first sentence, starting from the right, because Arabic starts from the right. So I'm looking at that picture of the nice condo or the house or whatever that is. Go ahead.
Hada bait.
Hada bait what? Go ahead, read everything.
Hada baitun.
Aywa, there we go. Hada baitun. Hada baitun. Notice what we have here. We have hada, which we just learned up here, which means this. And we have baitun, which, as you can tell from the picture, means house. Okay? So if you're looking for a little vocab, your first two vocab words are hada and baitun. Baitun means house. Hada means this. The next one will be very, very, very easy. Would Sheikh Ahmed like to read this? Very good. Hada masjidun. Hada, this masjidun is a masjid. And we're going to talk about the grammar of what's going on here more just after we get through these examples so that we learn the vocab. Who would like to, from everybody who's in the Zoom audience, who would like to read the third example here on the left? I see Dr. Mohsen, you're up.
Hada babun.
Excellent. Very good. Hada babun. This is a door. Very, very good. So now we're going to get off of this page for a second. I'm going to talk about what's going on here grammatically. Okay. We said that. Did you guys have anything else to say? I'm sorry, I cut you off.
He said.
Okay. So, if I have hada, and pardon my French here when it comes to my handwriting, hada baytun. We're going to learn now how to construct a jumla ismiya, which we learned is one of the two types of sentences in Arabic. What it means is that it is a sentence that begins with a noun. Okay. A jumla ismiya has two essential parts. Two essential parts. The first part is called, I'm going to write it here for you in Arabic or type it even better, al-mubtada. 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 What does that mean? That means simply, we would translate it in English as the subject. But as I said, I'll give you the translations for the grammatical terms in the beginning, but moving forward, we're just going to be using Arabic terms as you learn them, because some of them translate and some of them do not. So we have al-mubtada, which means the subject, and al-khabar, al-khabar, which means the predicate. That's all well and good. Sounds very intellectual and fancy. What does that mean? What is the difference between a subject and a predicate? It's simply this. The subject is the thing we're talking about, and the predicate is what we're saying about it. Okay? So if you want to add a question word to it, the subject answers the question of who. And the predicate answers the question of what. Or what about that who? Al-mubtada means the subject, what we're talking about. And al-khabar is the predicate, what we're saying about it. Every single jumla ismiya, every single sentence that begins with a noun has to have these two parts. There might be other parts that we can add in, this or that, flourishes, but all of that is extra. Every sentence that begins with a noun, it has to have essentially these two parts. Okay? So that means that if we know the formula, al-mubtada plus a khabar is a full sentence, a complete sentence, then all we have to do is now explore and learn the different types of mubtada, the different types of subjects that we can put in there, the different types of predicates, the different types of khabars that we can have. What we're doing here is we're starting you out with the absolutely most basic type, okay? A word which is a demonstrative pronoun like this, so that we don't even have to think about learning other vocabulary, the name for this, the name for that. We're just going to say this, and then is what? Baytun. Good. Now, you might have realized, or you might have had a question along the way here. Wait a minute. In English, we say it with three words. This is a house. Actually, four words. This is a house. There's only two words here. If we translate it word for word, literally, what we have here is this house. Or technically, and I'll explain why in a second, this a house. What on earth is going on that we don't even have is? I will explain it to you, and that will probably take up the rest of the time of class, inshallah. So the first thing that we have to look at here are, remember back to our example of our made-up language, Engelbic, okay? We said that meaning was going to be communicated by stuff that we put onto the word itself, right? Tamu hits the balla, right? That sounds like my family's Italian. That sounds like maybe how my grandpa would have said it, okay? The same concept applies here. Don't even worry about hadha for now. Hadha is an exception, and the reason they started you out with hadha is so that you don't even have to think about it. Let's look at baytun. Okay, check out what we have on the end here. We have two dhammas, dhammatan. This really stands for two of them, okay? If you ever see in the Quran or in Arabic a dhamma with this little hook at the end, that actually means two dhammas. But I'll write it out, both of them, so that you can see it. Baytun. All right, so the first thing that we notice is that it's dhamma, okay? It's not fatha. It's not kasra, it's not sukun. It's not anything else other than that. So now we're going to take or learn our first rule about the khabar, okay? The khabar has to be with a dhamma, okay? That's the short rule. In Arabic, we kind of cheat because we tell little white lies. I tell you a white lie that's like a half truth because it's just enough for you to understand the beginning, and then I'm going to show you later on all the examples where, well, actually that's not true. There's this and that and the other. But for now, just trust me when I say that dhamma khabar. The khabar has dhamma. Okay? The mubtada also has dhamma, but again, using hadha, we don't see it. We'll talk about that later. Good. The second question you should ask yourself is, why did we give it two dhammas? Why didn't we just give it one dhamma? Why did we give it a tanween, right? You guys understand, tanween, it is when you have two harakats, not just one. Two dhammas, two fathas, two kasras is what we mean by tanween. Okay? If we put two of them here, it means a house, not the house. Okay? This tanween is what we call alamatun nakira. Oh my Lord, what is that? It means that it is a sign or the proof that it is indefinite. Let me actually type it right here. That'll be better. Indefinite. What do I mean by indefinite? Understanding definite and indefinite is a very, very important concept in Arabic and even in English. What it has to do with is whether we know precisely the one that I'm talking about or not, or if this is just one of many. So if I said this is the house, what it means is that this is the single house that maybe we were looking for, maybe we were talking about before, right? Oh, this is the house. This is that house that we were talking about. Yeah, the one with the this and then that. If I say this is a house or this is a house, then we are simply saying that this one house is one house among many houses. There are other houses other than this house. Okay? And that is where we get what communicates that in Arabic is, like we said, Arabic is a synthetic language. It's not going to use it with word order. It's not always even going to have its own word. Sometimes we're just going to slap something on to the end of the word to show you that's what it means. Here, that's the tanween. Having a tanween means a, indefinite. So if we're going to translate it, this... Your question? A house. Good. Okay. Now you might look at me and say, well, wait a second, Tom. You said that you were going to explain why there's no is. You didn't do that. You just explained why where the A is. Okay. Well, habba habba, you know, step by step. We've explained where the A is. We know that this is A. This is indefinite. Because of the tanween. Hada baytun, not baytu, not bayta, not bayti, baytun. Where is? Where did it go? To answer that question, we need to answer another question. We said that bayt is indefinite. What's hada? Is hada definite or indefinite? Sheikh Ahmed. Hada is indefinite. So when I say this, I don't know which one I'm talking about. Okay. We have a second opinion. اختلف العلماء. We have القول الأول. The first opinion is that. And the second opinion is that. Okay, the second opinion is the راجح, is the correct in this مسألة, is that hada is definite. If I say this mug of tea, that means that I'm talking about a specific one. I'm not talking about a class. I'm not talking about any old one. I'm talking about something specific. So where is in a jumlata ismiya, in a sentence that begins with a noun, the is implied wherever you switch from definite to indefinite. It's a little bit deep. It's a little bit deep. Whenever you switch from definite to indefinite in a sentence, it's understood that what you mean in there is the word is. You're making a statement of being. Hada baytun. This is a house. Now that's all theory. Let's get back to the practice. Sharing the screen back to the book. So that goes for all of the examples that we learn. Hada baytun. This is a house. We can tell it's a because it has a tanween on the end. We know that is there because the first part is definite and the second part is indefinite. Hada masjidun. This is a masjid. Masjid is indefinite, meaning we say a masjid, not the masjid, because it has a tanween. And we know that the is there because the first part of the sentence is definite and the second part of the sentence is indefinite. Same thing with hada babun. This is a door. It is implied in the switch from definite to indefinite, and I'll teach you the words for that in Arabic next class, inshallah. It is implied, that the is implied wherever it switches over from being definite to indefinite, and the a door is in the tanween. Let's take some more examples. Who would like to read out the next example, let's say, from people who are in? Go for it. I heard someone.
Hada kitabun.
Very good. Excellent. Hada kitabun, translated as this is a book. Excellent. Next up. Who wants to do the next one? I can't see everybody at the same time. Dang it. Where are you at? No, dang it fell asleep. Or he's having connectivity issues. Okay.
Hada qalamun.
Very good. Yes. Hada qalamun. Hada qalamun. This is a pen. Excellent. I'm going to keep reading the remaining examples just because this is going to cut off in exactly 1 minute. Hada miftahun. Hada miftahun. This is a key. Hada maktabun. Hada maktabun. This is a table or a desk. Hada sarirun. Hada sarirun. This is a bed. Hada kursiyun. Hada kursiyun. This is a chair. All of you should memorize all that vocabulary for next class, inshallah. And that's where we'll stop for today. Does anybody have any questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
If I like to record this Zoom class, how do we do that?
I have it all recorded. I'll give everybody access to the recordings, and it will be on YouTube, inshallah.